Excerpt from The Butcher Boy by Patrick McCabe. The black road twisted in and out of the curly countryside. Like a ribbon at the end of it was Joe's school. And what was he going to say then? "For fuck's sake, Francie, you've done it again. Hey, Joe," I'd shout. "Saddle up. We're riding out. Yee-haw." I was getting as bad as Ma. "Whiz this way, then whiz the other way. I'll do this. No, I'll do that. The whiz again." I know. I'd think some more about Joe in the old days. And then more laughing. Big whirly clouds made of ink powder ride in the sky, and a music book stuck in me back pocket. Then the school, rising out of the fields with all its yellow windows gleaming. Another house of 100 windows. But this time it was different. Behind one of them windows was Joe, and when I thought that, I leaped so high I could have headed the moon like a football. "Francie Brady plays for the town. He's 40 yards out, 30 yards out, 20, 10 yards out. It's a long ball and the goalie's missed it. And yes, Francie Brady has scored a goal for the town. Francie Brady has scored a goal. The moon is at the back of the net." I had been tramping for over an hour before I seen it. And then soon as I turned the corner, what happens? Out go the lights. Foot, every last one. "Hey! What the hell do you think you're at up there turning off them lights? Leave them on. How am I supposed to find Joe Purcell? Hey, do you not hear me?" Then, all of a sudden, I thought, this is something to do with Mrs. Nugent. She's heard about me going to see Joe, and she has some plan up her sleeve. She's told the priests to switch off all the lights so they can lie in wait for me, and when I'm finished running around the place like an idiot looking for him, she'll appear out of the shadows standing there with them smiling. "So you couldn't find him, could you not? That's a pity, Francis, isn't it?" And then I knew that would be the end of it, and I'd never find him then. And then I started breaking my arse laughing. It was such a stupid idea. "Oh no," I said, "this is one thing Mrs. Nugent isn't going to spoil." I thought some daft things, but that was the daftest yet. I went round the back and nearly walked into a big bin full of brock. You'd think with me being the king of the brock, I'd have been able to see that. I was in behind the kitchens. "Grr," says a dog. "Fuck up," I says, but I managed to get past him all right. I could hear the toilets hissing. "Hiss, hiss, we can see you, Francie." I kept checking the book to see that I still had it in my back pocket. Where did I end up? Only in a room full of football boots and the smell of sweaty oxters. Curse the fuck on this, and I had to start again. Da-da-da, along the wall. "Don't move." 6 soldiers out of nowhere, cocking rifles. "Up against the wall, so we have you at last, Mr. Brady." No, none of that. Only snoring priests and bogmen. But where were they? Not in here. Nothing, only an empty bed and a cupboard full of medicine bottles. "I think I'll have a look at these," I said, and shoveled a few coloured pills into my hand out of a little brown bottle. Gulp, down the hatch they went. I wonder what they were. I don't know. Whee! I thought I heard someone shouting from the other end of the corridor. "You take a left, then next right, Francie, and you'll find him no problem." I turned around to thank him, whoever it was, but there's no one there. Then the pills said, "Oh, that was just me, Francie." "Pill," I said, "you bastard." "Now, now, Francie," said the pill, "for that I'll just have to turn your feet to sponge." Squish, squish, along the tiles. "What's this? The biggest bell in the world sitting under the stairs." I said, "Mrs. Nugent, if you're in behind that bell, you had better come out." "I know you're in there, Mrs. Nugent, you can't fool me." Then I started laughing. I couldn't stop myself. It wasn't an ordinary laugh either, it was a bogman laugh, the way they laugh at nothing with snots coming out of their noses, still laughing long after the joke is over. I says, "I know what I'll do. I'll give this bell a whack and see what happens." I'd say it'd make enough noise to waken every boarding school bogman in the world, even the ones who are completely deaf. "Ready, steady, fuck off." If I did that, they'd be down on me like a ton of bricks, and maybe give Joe the boot into the bargain. "Oh no, you don't, Pill. You'll not make a cot of old Francie that easy." "Pill," I said, "have manners." I was in a right state now with all this laughing. I couldn't stop. I says, "I wonder what tricks Joe gets up to in this place. Sliding down the knotted sheets out of the dormitory and away off to midnight feasts in the boat shed, I'll be bound." "I say, Purcell, you bounder, you are a perfect cad, for fuck's sake." "I wonder is there any secret passageways," I said. "Fall against the knob of a banister, next thing, ah, and away off down a black corridor full of cobwebs and the skeletons of dead bogmen boys." Up the stairs I went. "What's this? A wooden door. Creak, creak. Our Lord Jesus appearing out of nowhere in the dark, hanging on to the cross. Hello, yes, what can I do for you?" "I'm looking for Joe Purcell, Jesus." "Straight on up to the top of the stairs." "Right so, Jesus. Thank you." "What's all this?" I said. "100 sleeping bogmen." "But not for long. Wait till they seen me and Joe in action." "Ta-da! flick, on goes the light, blazes away, and them all gone chinky-eyed and pulling the clothes round them. "What's going on? Who's putting on the lights?" I nearly said. "Why, it's me, Algernon Carruthers, of course." When I thought that, I doubled up again, and all I could see was them staring at me. They were all saying to the prefect, "Who is he? You do something about it, it's your job," and all this, but he wasn't going to do it, and he had the blankets pulled up the same as the rest of them. I thumped my thigh with the rolled-up music book. "Joe, where are you, Joe boy? I'm here. Saddle up, we're riding out." I shouted it for all I was worth, and then I shouted it again in case he didn't hear me. As soon as I said that, all the things I'd ever worried about floated away like silk scarves in the breeze, and I knew all I had to do now was wait for Joe, and we were off, and this time we'd be gone for good. It made me feel so good I shouted again, "Joe! Yamma yamma yamma! Yamma yamma yamma!" Then I said, "Yee-haw! Take him to Missouri, men. We'll ride out to the mountains, Joe, and there we can track for days. We can listen to the coyotes in the night. The coyotes baying at the moon because it makes them feel food. They howl out everything they ever worried about." Then I did it. "Awoo! Awoo!" I closed my eyes and cried out across the prairie. Then I looked up, and who's coming? The priest. It was Father Fox, not because his real name was Fox, but because he had a long snout and a "I wonder how could I trick this fellow" face. "Hello, Father Fox," I said. "I'm looking for Joe Purcell." "You're what?" he says. And I could see that Father Fox, he wasn't such a nice old fox at all. His face went all dark, and his eyes didn't say, "I wonder how could I trick this fellow anymore." He said, "One more word out of you, my friend, and I'll take this collar off, and I'll floor you, by Christ I will, and don't think for one second that I wouldn't." "Father Fox, I am surprised at you. Don't say such things." That's what Algernon Carruthers would have said, but I didn't say it. I just said, "I'm looking for Joe. Can you help me, please?" What did Fox say, half to himself and half to the bogman? I cannot believe it. I just cannot believe it. He shook his head. And when the bogmen seen him do it, they did it too. I could hear doors banging and all this commotion and running on the stairs. Then two more priests came in, and who had they with them? Only Joe Purcell. "Joe!" I shouted. "Fuck!" I knew I shouldn't have shouted that, but I did. Fox made a wind at me, but I ducked. He tried again, but that was no use either. I sidestepped it. He was only making a cod of himself. All I had to do now was walk right over to Joe, and that's what I would have done, only for what happened then. Who was standing right behind him? Only Philip Nugent. He was taller now, a bit tougher looking, but it was him all right, with the hair hanging down in his eyes. He was staring at me in a way he never did before, straight at me. As soon as I seen him, everything started to go wrong, because he wasn't supposed to be there. All the things I was going to say, I couldn't remember. I couldn't remember what they were now. Then the priest brought Joe over, and the way he looked at me, my stomach turned over. It wasn't Joe. Philip was still standing over by the door with his arms folded. I knew when it was all over that he would be telling them that I had wanted to be one of them and had turned my back on my own mother. He'd laugh then and say, imagine him thinking he could be one of us. Joe said to me, "What do you want?" No, he didn't. He said, "What do you want?" It was no use me trying to say I wanted us to ride out, Joe. I wanted us to talk about the old days and what we'd do if we won $100 million trillion, maybe go tracking in the mountains. I don't know, Joe. It was no use saying that, for I knew it wouldn't come out right, so I said nothing. I just stood there looking at him. He asked me again, "What do you want me for? Are you deaf or something?" Then he said, "Do you hear me? What do you want me for?" I never thought Joe would ask that. I never thought he would have to ask that, but he did, didn't he? When I heard him say it, that was when I started to feel myself draining away, and I couldn't stop. The more I tried, the worse it got. I could have floated to the ceiling like a fag paper. "Please, Joe, come with me." That was all I wanted to say. Dumb people have holes in the pit of their stomachs, and that's the way I was now, the dumbest person in the whole world, who had no words left for anything at all. All I had now was one thing, and that was the music book. It had got all twisted up with sweat marks all over it. I says, "Don't worry, Francie, it's going to be all right." I smoothed it out a bit and handed it to him. Some way or other I dropped it, and the next thing the priest came in between us and says, "Look, this has gone far enough. Is this fellow a friend of yours or is he not, Purcell?" I looked at Joe. "Please, Joe," I was saying, but he wasn't looking at me. He was just saying, "I'm tired and I want to get back to my bed. It's 3 in the morning. Then Joe just shook his head and said, "No." Then he left. He said something to Philip on the way out, and Philip smiled. I stayed there for a minute. I was still twisting the book. Then the priest said, "I think it's time you were leaving, Mr. Brady." I said, "Yes. Yes, Father." And they brought me to the gate, and they said I was lucky they didn't call the police. I said, "Yes, it was." Then I went off into the dark. I'd left a bike somewhere, but I didn't know where. It didn't matter anyway. I just walked. I felt like walking. "That wasn't Joe," I said. "I don't know who that was, but it wasn't Joe. Joe was gone. They took him away from me." And all I could see was a pair of thin lips saying, "That's right, we did. And there's nothing you can do that will ever bring him back again. Isn't that true, Francis Pig, you little piggy baby pig?" And I says, "Yes, Mrs. Nugent, it is."